be purifying for myself and helpful for the devotees. So, I mean, it's really very humbling because I remember in Kanpur and in Calcutta, neither Prem Harinam Prabhu nor Acharyatna Prabhu ever missed a class. Still, they have come all the way to hear it again, so I can't. It's something very much inconceivable, you know. I can't conceive of anyone having this kind of enthusiasm for hearing. I mean, not just second canto, even the subsequent visits, you know. I mean, hardly one or two, and that too, just part of the class they missed because of some meetings. But otherwise, they had attended practically the whole thing. So it's very inspiring for me. So the second canto is generally one of the not so well preferred cantos because of its philosophical nature. So we'll try, but it's a very, very important canto also. Lot of basic concepts which are very much vital to understand the later cantos. So Prabhupada has titled this first chapter of second canto as the first step in God realization. Srila Vishnachakrabarti Thakur has titled this chapter as the description of the universal form. So, in one sense, if you see, these are actually complementary titlings. The way Vishnachakrabarti Thakur and Prabhupada have titled these chapters, they are quite complementary. Because, in one sense, if you see, to understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead or the Absolute Truth, Krishna says, Bhaktyama Mabijanati. Only by devotion is it possible to understand the Supreme Lord. And if you see, in the Bhagavad Gita also, the middle six chapters talk about bhakti. And in the middle six chapters of bhakti, if you see, starting from seventh chapter onwards, it starts with Bhumirapo Nalovayu Kammano Buddhi Revacha Ahankareti Yamme Binna Prakriti Rashvada. It talks about the Lord's material vibhutis. It talks about the Lord's material energies and how he deals with his material energy, Bahiranga Shakti, with respect to this material world. And also, in 8th canto, 8th chapter of Bhagavad Gita also, which is within the realm of bhakti, it speaks about Yoga Mishra Bhakti. And in particular, speaks about the gradual liberation of a yogi, which is called Krama Mukti, where he passes through various planetary systems. 9th chapter also, if you see, which is called the most confidential knowledge. Even in that chapter, if you see that the most confidential knowledge is given only in the form of some principles. You know, it's not like Krishna's interactions with the Vrajavasis. Now, that kind of subject matter is not spoken of in the 9th chapter also, the most confidential knowledge. He talks about Mayatatam idam sarvam jagat avyakta murtina matstani sarva bhutani nachaham tesho vastitaha. How the Supreme Lord pervades this whole universe through his avyakta murti. What is that avyakta murti? The universal form. And in the 10th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, he speaks about vibhutis. His vibhutis means, you can say, material manifestations of his spiritual energy, or you can say material counterparts. Just like you have bhumi, apo, anala, vayu, kam, all these things you have in the spiritual world also, but they are not material, they are not matter, they are spiritual and they are conscious. Whereas in the material world, their counterparts are not spiritual and they are not conscious. For example, fire, irrespective of whoever touches it, in the material world will burn. Doesn't matter whomever it may be. You put a picture of Krishna also, it will burn the picture of Krishna also. But in the spiritual world, fire is not like that. Fire is very conscious. Water is very conscious. The stones of Vrindavan are very conscious. When it is summer, they become cool to give a very pleasurable experience to Krishna and the Vrajavasis. When it is winter, they become warm to give pleasure to Krishna and the Vrajavasis. So they are conscious. But in the material world, matter is unconscious. So, in the 10th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna speaks about his vibhutis, which means his material counterparts. Material counterparts of his spiritual opulences in the spiritual world. After hearing it, in the 11th chapter, Arjuna interestingly asks to see that form in which the Lord expounds as the various vibhutis, which means he asks to see the universal form. So now 5 of the 6 chapters are over and we are wondering where is that confidential knowledge, most confidential knowledge about bhakti. Because most of it, what he is talking about is Krishna's interaction with matter only. And in 12th chapter, he speaks about various categories of practice of bhakti and he speaks about difference between impersonal worship and personal worship. And then the final section, Krishna speaks about the qualities of a devotee which are very endearing to the Supreme Lord. That's all. So in one sense, if you see, most of the bhakti section of Bhagavad Gita actually speaks about Krishna's interaction with material energy only. In that sense also, Bhagavad Gita is called the preliminary study. Because if that aspect is not very clear, higher subject matters cannot be understood properly in the right sense. So, if you see, when one's gradual progress from the absolutely impersonalistic understanding to appreciating the Supreme Lord as the reservoir of all rasas, Akhila Rasamrita Murti. One who is perfectly capable of reciprocating with the innermost desires and flavors of every living entity. That understanding of the Supreme Lord is the culmination of understanding of the Absolute Truth. There is nothing higher than that. That is the highest understanding. And on the other end of the spectrum of theism, we are not talking about atheism. The other end of the spectrum of theism is the absolutely impersonalistic understanding of the Supreme Lord, of the Absolute Truth. I won't say Supreme Lord. But this transition from the absolutely impersonalistic understanding to completely personal understanding, not to speak of personal, but he is so personal that he would exactly act in a way that is most pleasing to you. And he is capable of knowing what is most pleasing to you. That journey is not a very abrupt journey. It's not like one day someone wakes up and finds that from his impersonal understanding he has come to the stage of Paramatma understanding, and from there he has come to the stage of Bhagavan understanding. It does not happen overnight. Even when we become devotees and after receiving the seed of pure devotional service, still subconsciously we keep making the transition slowly. It doesn't happen immediately. I was reading, I think, was it Yamuna Mataji's biography? So in that there is this Yamuna Mataji, you know, she is in London and she is taking care of deity worship of Radha Landanishwara deities. And at that time, you know, Mandakini Mataji, you all know Mandakini Mataji, right? So she joins and they come from a very impersonalistic understanding. Their background is completely impersonalistic, their understanding of the absolute truth. And three of them joined together. One Jyotirmayi Mataji, Leelavati Mataji and Mandakini Mataji. So French, from France. So they have completely impersonalistic understanding. And when Yamuna Mataji was so meticulously taking care of the deities, dressing the deities, feeding them, they suddenly came inside and saw what Yamuna Mataji was doing, and somehow because of their impersonalistic background, it seemed extremely hilarious to them. So all three of them started laughing while the deity worship was going on. So it was so difficult, in spite of, you know, they had started chanting the holy names and all that, they had started staying in the temple. But somehow when they saw the deity worship, it took them some time to actually digest it and make the transition to understand that actually the absolute truth could be a person who likes to be dressed nicely, who likes to be fed nicely, who likes to have a relationship with his devotees. And that was like a big transition. So this transition takes time. And one of the first step out of the impersonalistic understanding of the absolute truth is appreciating the Lord in his Purushavatara features. Purushavatara features and the expansion of the Purushavatara features is the universal form. So which means appreciating finally that the absolute truth can have a form, can have some energies, but only accepting the absolute truth to have some material energy. Energy to manipulate this material world, energy to create this material world, energy to maintain this material world, energy to annihilate this material world, but nothing more than that. He may not have a personal relationship with someone, he may not perform pastimes, like personal pastimes, that kind of appreciation may not be there, but appreciation of the Supreme Lord in his Purushavatara features, that he does have some energy, but that energy is for taking care of this material universe. That's like the next stage. That's the first step, as Prabhupada says, first step in God realization from the impersonalistic understanding is actually appreciating the material energy of the Supreme Lord. And how the Lord deals within the realm of this material energy, which means with this material world. So therefore, a thorough understanding of this aspect only will help us progress further theologically to the next stage of Krishna's personal interactions with his devotees. Otherwise, we will take it very cheaply. Not very consciously, but subconsciously. That's why if you see the second canto, third canto, fourth canto, fifth canto, these four cantos speak exclusively about the Lord's dealing with his external energy only. To a large extent, some extent personal pastimes come in between. But otherwise, fifth canto is Vedic cosmology, fourth canto is Visarga, third canto is Sarga, primary creation. Second canto is almost Sarga, Visarga, both I discuss. So second, third, fourth, fifth cantos are in one sense, if you see, the Lord's dealings with the material energy only. And then the more higher pastimes, they start coming later. So therefore, in one sense, if you see, as we saw, these two titlings as given by Srila Vishnachakrita Thakur and Prabhupada are quite complementary titling, because an understanding of the universal form indicates accepting that the Supreme Lord can have some energies. Because the impersonalistic understanding is that the Lord has no form, no energy, no qualities, no pastimes, nothing. But the universal form, the universal form is generally in conjunction with the understanding of the Purushavataras. And that's how it is discussed also. So, the Purushavatara features is the, in one sense, the first step in understanding personal form of the Lord. And then come the Leelavataras, where they can perform some more intimate pastimes. But still, and the Lord can have a very dignified consort and one. And then when it goes further into the realm of Krishna's pastimes, then the conception of the absolute truth can have friends, he can have mother and father who can cater to his personal needs, and how he becomes completely controlled by them. His qualities such as Bhritya Vashyata, how he can be completely controlled by his devotees. All of that manifest, in Krishna only. That's the highest understanding of the absolute truth. But to reach that kind of understanding and have proper appreciation of that understanding, there is a proper protocol. There is a proper sequence in which one needs to understand and appreciate the absolute truth. So, one of the first steps to help us develop that ultimate understanding is to appreciate, understand and appreciate the material energy of the Supreme Lord, how the Lord deals with his material energy in the form of Purushavataras, and how he expands into this universal form, to help some people appreciate, to help some people take that first step towards the personal conception. Even though it is an impersonal form, in one sense. It is an impersonal form, but nevertheless, it's some kind of a form, universal form. So we will start seeing this. And and also, if you see, material energy is something which is more relatable to us, to the living entities also, to the conditioned souls. Anything spiritual is still, our senses still respond to material stimulus only. Our mind still thinks in terms of material sense objects only. The impressions in our mind and subtle body are also still mostly material impressions. So, that's something more relatable. And so if someone can relate to, if someone comes and tells there is a spiritual world and there is a Lord of the spiritual world, it might seem like some fantasy land. But we may not be able to perfectly relate to it. So, So therefore, it's not, even though Bhagavatam is spoken, you can say, inspired by ecstasy of Shukadeva Goswami, but nevertheless, it's not extremely random. Some pastimes may not be chronological, like especially you come to the 10th canto and all, and rest of the cantos are also not in any way chronological. Sometimes in between some sections, purposefully, you know, some chronology is maintained, because when you have to describe the genealogical line and all that, you can't break the chronology. But otherwise, it is spoken out of ecstasy. So chronology is not taken so seriously, but nevertheless, being non-different from the form of the Lord, there is a spiritual logic to the flow of it. It helps us, it very naturally helps us develop a very healthy understanding of the absolute truth. Nothing is given very prematurely, so that we develop a very healthy appreciation of the higher subject matters. And Prabhupada again and again and again will hammer this point as to how we should approach these subject matters only from the beginning and not randomly jump to the 10th canto pastimes. And also, if you see, whether it is Parikshit Maharaj approaching Shukadeva Goswami or Vidura approaching Maitreya, Shaunakadi Rishi is asking questions to Suta Goswami. Interestingly, you know, all of them, even though they want to understand the highest subject matter, but they start from a very basic point of view. The first thing that Vidura asks Maitreya is, Sukaya karmani karoti loko, natai sukam vanya duparamamva. Vindeta bhuya, tateva dukkam, yadatra yuktam bhagavan vadenaha. So he asked that in this material world, everyone is suffering and everyone wants to attain happiness of some sort. But even though they endeavor with all their actions, they are constantly endeavoring to attain happiness, but nevertheless, they end up getting distress. But this experience still does not teach them a lesson. Again, they end up engaging in activities for sukha pravritti and dukkha nivritti, even though it always ends up in the opposite. So, how do I understand this? Yadatra yuktam bhagavan vadenaha. Oh Mitra, you know the answers for all these questions. Can you please explain to me? And then later he speaks about, when he asks about sarga, visarga and so on. Parikshit Maharaj also, in one sense, you see, he is starting from sarga, visarga and so on. So there is a reason why these things are asked in this particular sequence. Like that. So, last time I had some acidity problem and the doctor gave me some medicines. Some are supposed to be taken 1 hour before the meal and some medicines are supposed to be taken after the meal. 1 hour before the meal and some medicines after the meal. They could have taken, okay, take these medicines anytime. Because, you know, probably the medicine prior to the meal has does something to maybe prepare our digestive system for the food that's going to come, and the medicine that's going to be taken after the meal is going to do something to actually digest the food. You know, there is a reason why something is asked to take before the meal, something is asked to take after the meal. So the same way, the sequence in which the pastimes are described in Bhagavatam, it's not random. Even though it's born out of an internal ecstasy of the speaker, but certainly it's not random. So, Okay. So now, if you see about titling of cantos, the first canto is titled as creation. Even though there is not much about creation in the first canto. And second canto is titled cosmic manifestation, which is understandable. Then third canto is titled as status quo. So why? We don't know. And fourth canto is titled as creation of the fourth order. So I was curious, you know, has Prabhupada ever mentioned about this titling of the cantos? So when I did a basic folio search, I got two references for it. One is a very interesting reference, the Jaladuta diary of Srila Prabhupada. So Prabhupada is traveling for the first time to the West, and he has all his first three volumes of the first canto are lying in the trunk. That's all he has. And he is sitting in the Jaladuta and he is planning the next 11 cantos. So every monumental endeavor starts with something very basic. So Prabhupada starts that monumental endeavor by titling the cantos. So in one of his Jaladuta diary pages, he has given title to the 12 cantos. So this sort of matches very much with the titling. Actually, the acharyas don't title the cantos that way, but they say that these 10 topics of Bhagavatam, Atra Sarga, Usargascha, Sthanam, Poshanam, Utaya, Manvantareshanu, Katha, Nirodho, Mukti, Rashare. These 10 topics are primarily attributed to some canto. Like for example, Sarga, primary creation is attributed to third canto. Visarga, the secondary creation is attributed to fourth. Sthanam, the Vedic cosmology is attributed to fifth. Poshanam to sixth. Uti to seven. Manvantara to eight. Ishanukata to nine. Nirodha to 12. Mukti to 11. And Ashraya to 10. And there is a fairly good consensus amongst the acharyas with regards to this type of titling. But interestingly, Prabhupada titles the first canto as creation. So we wanted to search for a place where Prabhupada has he comprehensively listed the titles of what he envisioned. So sitting in Jaladuta, he is giving titles to the cantos. So Prabhupada, the first canto is titling it as the absolute truth. Okay. Because it starts with Janmadhyasayaton Vayadiparatascharthesha Vignyasurat and so on. Canto 2, he titles as Symptoms of Objectivity. I don't know what it means. Canto 3, he titles as Creation of the Material World, which is Sarga. And that is described in detail in the third canto. And similarly, the acharyas also attribute third canto to Sarga. Fourth canto he titles as the sub-creators. Actually, this is called Visarga. So Visarga means secondary creation. So primary creation means creating the apartment, the 14-storied apartment for all the species to stay. And Visarga means creating the bodies for individual living entities. So that is created by Brahmaji and all the Prajapatis, Manus and so on. That is their duty. So that is described, the whole of fourth canto in one sense you see is Visarga. Even though there is lot of Visarga happening in the third canto also and in the fifth canto also, but fourth canto is exclusively Visarga. The descendants of Swayambhu Manu, starting from Uttanapad and his descendants. the whole thing is described how they created their genealogical line is all fourth canto. So even the Visarga comes in other cantos also, it is primarily attributed to fourth canto. So Prabhupada is also titling the fourth canto as the sub-creators. The fifth canto, Prabhupada titles it as the planetary system. So, which is Sthanam, the Vedic cosmology's fifth canto is described. Canto 6 is Lord the Protector, Poshanam. So, Poshanam means how the Lord protects his devotee. So, the sixth canto gets more personal there. How the Lord protects. To what extent the Lord can go to protect. Ajami is just called his son Narayan. The Lord gave him the benefit of doubt and was ready to protect him. Indra, even though he may not be a pure devotee of the Lord, but still because he worships the Supreme Lord, the Lord protects. Vritrasura may not be even in a human yoni. He may be in a very inimical yoni, Rakshasa yoni. Still the Lord protects. So the main theme, of course, the Lord protects throughout Bhagavatam. The first canto only protects Parikshit Maharaj. But sixth canto is specifically Poshanam. How the Lord protects his devotees. To what extent the Lord can go to protect his devotees. So this is Poshanam, sixth canto this is described. And seventh canto, Prabhupada's titling is Creative Impetus. Utaya Karma Vasana, that's how the second canto describes what is Uti. Uti means Vasanas. Vasanas here does not mean sinful impressions necessarily. Vasana here refers to, in general, material impressions or impressions for that matter. And impressions impel actions, like we saw in Bhaktivinoda Sindhu also. Avidya, then sinful desires, bijam, then sinful activities, action. So the avidya is nothing but sinful impressions. Okay. This matter cannot give any pleasure, but all these impressions give the opposite conviction. What do you mean? Oh, this rasgulla can never make you happy. Really? The last time also, I ate one, I had a very nice time. So, you know, the impressions give a very powerful pratyaksha of possible material enjoyment. Okay. So, those impressions impel actions. So, that is Uti. So, this is described through the life of Hiranyakashipu and Prahlad Maharaj. Hiranyakashipu was born out of a very unholy union, because of which, you know, lot of unholy impressions right from the womb, and it manifested in the form of a very demoniac character, demoniac actions. On the other hand, his own son Prahlad Maharaj, when he was within the womb of his demoniac mother, he got to hear Bhagavatam. He came out and he became, his activities were completely devotional. So, sinful impressions, sinful activities. Devotional impressions, devotional activities. And the last section of 7th canto talks about Varnashram. So, Varnashram is a facility given by the Supreme Lord to honor this principle of Uti. That everyone would naturally act according to the impressions that they have gained over many lifetimes. As Krishna says, Sadrisham Cheshtate Svasya Prakritir Jnanavanapi Prakritim Yanti Bhutani Nigrahakim Karishyati. Everyone will naturally act according to the impressions that they have accumulated over many lifetimes. So Krishna says, fine. Let me create a system where you are allowed to act according to the impressions that you have accumulated. And I will reward you for it. You act according to your nature and get the reward. That is Varnashram system. The last 5 chapters of 7th canto, Narada Muni speaks about this Varnashram, which is a system which is based on the principle of Uti. So, 7th canto. And Prabhupada titles it as creative impetus. The 8th canto, Prabhupada titles as change of manpower or manvantara. Manvantarani Saddharma, 2nd canto says. What is manvantara? Manvantara means Saddharma. What dharma? The dharma which was practiced by the controllers of that particular manvantara. It is mentioned that each manvantara has 6 personalities. The Manuputras, the sons of the Manu, then the Manvantara Avatar, who is a Vishnu Tattva, who is the overseer of that particular Manvantara period. Then there is the Saptarishis. The Saptarishis are a post. So every Manvantara, the persons occupying that post vary. Then there are the demigods, their posts also, you know, someone else occupies at the end of Manvantara. And then there is Indra. So these 6 personalities take care of the administration of particular manvantaras. Even now they are taking care. But we can't see, we can't feel them. We may at the most, if we are updated, we may at the most know what welfare schemes Narendra Modi is implementing and all that, only that much. We can't know much about the welfare schemes that are implemented by Manus and Manuputras and Manvantara Avataras, we don't know. Only means to know them is through the Shastras. So if you see the 8th canto, whatever description of Krishna Katha comes, is all performed by Manvantara Avataras. Because at the beginning of 3rd canto, when he describes about, you might be wondering why I am speaking all these things, you know, why I am not starting from 2.1.1. Generally, the first session, it's like a pep talk session, you can say, to create the mood to approach the 2nd canto and 3rd canto and subsequent cantos which are going to speak a lot about creation and universal form and, you know, this kind of seemingly very dry topics. So unless someone has if they get turned down in the first 2.1.1 only, then there is no scope for a long time actually. 2.1.2 and 2.3 and 2.4 and 2.5 is all going to be lot of universal forms and creation and secondary creation coming up. So generally the first session I take to, you know, sort of create the mood, so you might have to bear with it for some time. So talking about the 8th canto, 8th canto speaks about this manvantara. So in the beginning only Vidura asked, as soon as Swayambhu Manu was born, Vidura asked Maitreya, what is Swayambhu Manu? Is such a great personality. His genealogical line is so glorious. I really have a desire to hear about the genealogical line of Swayambhu Manu. Can you please speak about it? So he starts speaking. And it runs from 3rd canto, the 4th canto, the 5th canto, the 6th canto. It's all the genealogical line of Swayambhu Manu. Then 7th canto is a slight detour. And at the beginning of 8th canto, Parikshit Maharaj asked Sukadeva Goswami, see, actually, I was really interested in hearing about Swayambhu Manu, but what I forgot to tell you in the beginning is that actually I wanted to know about all the 14 Manus that appear in one day of Brahma. I want to know about all of their genealogical lines, what happened. And already 7 cantos have passed, which means almost close to say, you can say 2.5 days have already passed. And only one Manu is over. Another 13 Manus are there. So, Shrivadeva Goswami says, okay, in this, now I will start describing all the 14 Manus. But little bit briefly. Then he explains the concept of this Manvantara period. And then who are the administrators during the Manvantara. And then he describes in the first Manvantara, you know, Swayambhu Manvantara, Swayambhu Manu is the Manu, the Manuputras are Priyavrat Maharaj and Uttanapad and so on. And then he says, oh, the Manvantara Avatara is Lord Hari. And he is the one who delivered Gajendra. Then Parikshit Maharaj asks, who is Gajendra Moksha? Though this is a very famous pastime. So can you please speak about this Gajendra Moksha? So he describes Gajendra Moksha for a few chapters. Then he talks about the next Manvantara and he says, so and so was the Manu and the Manvantara avatar was Lord Ajita. So this Lord Ajita is the one who facilitated this whole Samudramantan Leela. And he said, oh, Samudramantan Leela, that's a very interesting pastime. Can you please speak about the Samudramantan Leela? And then few chapters run describing the Samudramantan Leela and like that. So like that the whole, you will see a lot of Krishna Katha there, but each pastime is performed by one Manvantara avatar. So that's why the 8th canto is titled as, like that, you know, by the end of 8th canto, all the 14 Manus are described. So that question is answered. So because the framework of Krishna Katha is a description of the various Manvantaras, therefore the 8th canto is titled as Manvantara. And Prabhupada also titles it as Change of Manpower. So manpower is Manu. So one Manu changes. And Canto 9 is titled as The Science of God. Ishanu Katha is the second canto describes Ishanu Katha means the descriptions of the pastimes of the Lord and his devotees. And then it says specifically, of course the whole Bhagavatam is that only. But more specifically, the nature of those pastimes is that Nana Akhyana Upabrahmita. It is filled with many, many short stories. That is the nature of Ishanu Katha. So if you see 9th canto, there are many, 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 many short stories. Small, small stories, you know, one chapter, half a chapter like that. Lot of short stories. And of course, stories of the Supreme Lord and his devotees. So therefore, the Ishanu Katha is attributed to the 9th canto. 10th canto is Krishna, the cause of all causes. Ashraya, that is 10th canto. 11th canto is the path of liberation, Mukti. The 11th canto describes the path of liberation through two prominent conversations. One, the first is the conversation between Nimi Maharaj and the Navayogendras. And the second is the conversation, more popular conversation between Uddhava and Krishna, the Uddhava Gita. Very elaborate. It's much longer than the Bhagavad Gita. It basically talks about Mukti. And the means to Mukti means, the means for Mukti is Bhakti only. So that's what is described throughout 11th canto. So very philosophical section of Bhagavatam. You can say the philosophical backbone of Bhagavatam is this conversation between Uddhava and Krishna. I know one very, very amazing devotee. I don't know him personally, but I have heard a lot about him. He's the cousin brother of one of the devotees. So, he has tremendous taste for Bhagavatam, and for last many decades he has been studying Bhagavatam. So the way he studies Bhagavatam is, he will study first canto and he spends at least, he's a householder devotee, like a vanaprastha you can say. He he spends at least 6, 7, 8 hours every day studying Bhagavatam. And he will study the first canto, and then he will study the 11th canto. Then he will study the second canto, then he will study the 11th canto. Then he will study the third canto, then he will study the 11th canto. So like that, many, many times he has studied all 12 cantos. Huh? But after every canto, he will study the 11th canto. So, because this 11th canto is the philosophical backbone of the whole Bhagavatam. If you see the acharyas, whether it is in Sandarbhas or in Bhaktarasamrita Sindhu or in their own Bhagavatam commentaries, for establishing any philosophical point, they will always quote from Uddhava Gita only. Again and again and again, establishing the superiority of bhakti or any philosophical point about varnashram, any philosophical point, they eventually come back to Uddhava Gita. Or the conversation between the Navayogendras and Nimi Maharaj. So, 11th canto is like a very pivotal canto of the whole Bhagavatam. And finally, the 12th canto talks about the Samam Bonam Prabhupada titles, or Nirodha is the leftover topic, the 10th topic. Rather, it's the 8th topic, which is attributed to the 12th canto. It Nirodha means destruction. Many different kinds of dissolutions are discussed in the 12th canto, different kinds of pralaya. So like that, this is one reference I got, which very much matches with the way in which the other acharyas have also not exactly titled the cantos, but attributed each one of these 10 topics to a particular canto predominantly. And the second reference I got was from the beginning of 6th canto. If you see, Prabhupada has given brief canto summary starting in the 5th canto. Brief canto summary, and before every chapter he would give brief chapter summary also. So, in the beginning of the 6th canto summary, Prabhupada writes, throughout Srimad Bhagavatam there are descriptions of 10 subject matters, including creation, subsequent creation and the planetary system, Sarga, Visarga, Sthanam. Sukadeva Goswami, the speaker of Srimad Bhagavatam, has already described creation, subsequent creation, the planetary and the planetary systems in the 3rd, 4th and 5th cantos. This is very clear mention. Creation, Sarga, 3rd. Subsequent creation, Visarga, 4th. Planetary systems, Sthanam, 5th. Now in the 6th canto, which consists of 19 chapters, he will describe Proshana or protection by the Lord. Okay. So, so now we'll see, of course you have completed the first canto. Shrinidhi Goswami for the first time is going to speak in the 2.1.1. The first verse of the second canto is the first verse that Shukadeva Goswami speaks. But what would inspire Shukadeva Goswami to speak for the next 11 cantos, we are going to see now. Some very interesting series of questions asked by Parikshit Maharaj, which not only indicates, it very much indicates his mood of surrender to a spiritual master. So we will quickly touch upon these questions that he is going to ask and the mood that he exhibits before asking that question. We will just touch upon that before we start the 2.1.1. So, Parikshit Maharaj says, Aho adhya vayam brahman satsevya kshatrabandava kripala atiti rupena bhavadbis tirtaka krita. So he says, O Brahmana, adhya vayam kshatrabandava. Today we low kshatriyas. Satsevyaha. We have become so much respected by the saintly people. Why? Bhavadbis tirtaka krita. Because great personalities like you, especially yourself, you have come and purified this place because of your coming. Otherwise, I have been dwelling here for so long, all these sages never assembled together. Now that you have come, everyone is here. Atithi rupena, you have come here in the form of a guest. Kripaya, out of your causeless mercy, you have come here. So, because of you, very low kshatriyas like us, we have also gained some respect. So, of course, Parikshit Maharaj is feeling this way because, you know, he has garlanded Shamik Rishi with a snake. And he takes full responsibility for it. Even though, we have to understand that this was inspired by the Yogamaya potency of Krishna. This act was not performed by, impelled by the three modes. But still, nevertheless, Parikshit Maharaj takes responsibility for it. Just like Arjuna's questions in the Bhagavad Gita should not be used to conclude that Arjuna was really not very intelligent at all. How is it that Krishna agreed to be the charioteer of such a person? So, we thought that Krishna is only Bhaktavatsala. The basic understanding also Arjuna doesn't seem to have. One should not come to such conclusions. Because Arjuna was put under such a kind of apparent confusion by Krishna so that Bhagavad Gita can come out. The same way Parikshit Maharaj was put under such a confusion so that Bhagavatam could come out. Like that. So, this we know because as soon as Parikshit Maharaj garlanded, just before garlanding he was thinking, oh, this Shamik Rishi, what does he think he is? You know, he is definitely faking. He is lazy to get up and offer me a seat and a glass of water. Therefore, he is closing his eyes and faking meditation. This is not correct. He should know better how to receive a guest and that to a king. So he says, I will teach him the right lesson. So he picks up a dead snake and garlands him. So this is so uncharacteristic of Parikshit Maharaj. He has never acted like this in his whole life. But as soon as he steps out of the hermitage of Shamik Rishi, he feels, what did I do? I insulted such an innocent Brahmana. Innocent? I mean, just while inside the ashram, he was, you know, really accusing him for faking and not doing any Atithi Seva. But all of a sudden, that same Shamik Rishi has become very innocent. That is real Parikshit Maharaj actually. So he is so innocent and I have insulted him like this. And he says that he thinks that I don't even want to go and apologize to Shamik Rishi, because if I apologize, it would embarrass him. Let whatever curse that has to come for this horrendous act of mine, let it come upon me. I don't want to even little bit embarrass Shamik Rishi by going and apologizing and making him feel bad for it. That is real Parikshit Maharaj. So, we should understand that this act of Parikshit Maharaj was impelled by the Yogamaya so that we all can get the access of Srimad Bhagavatam. Then he says, Yesham samsmaranat tumsam sadya shuddhyanti vaigraha kim punar darshana sparsha pada shochasanadavihi. Just by remembering you, my dear Shukadeva Goswami, Pumsam Grihaha Sadhyaha Shudyanti, the houses of people become immediately purified just by remembering you. Kimpunar Darshana Sparsha Pada Shochasanadibhi. What then to speak of having your Sakshat Darshan? What then to speak of getting an opportunity to touch you? What then to thing of warden to speak of getting an opportunity to wash your feet. How much more fortunate is such a person? Because Parikshit Maharaj has received all that opportunity now. He got an opportunity to see him, touch him, wash his lotus feet, and drink the foot wash, sprinkle it on his head. So he feels, he expresses his gratitude like that. So he is basically rejoicing his own fortune. Sannidhyatte mahayogin patakani mahantyapi sadyo nashyanti vaipumsam vishnor ivasura itara. O mahayogi, mahantyapi patakani, even the greatest of sins, sadyo nashyanti, they immediately get destroyed. Te sannidhyat, but if someone remains close to you. Vishnor sura itara haiva, just like when Lord Vishnu appears, all the demons have to flee. Or he will kill them. So therefore, I feel so fortunate that whatever sinful reactions and sinful impressions are there within my heart, I know that it will definitely be destroyed immediately. Apime Bhagavan Pritaha Krishna Pandu Sutat Priyaha Taitri Swashraya Prityartam Tat Gotrasya Atta Bandava. He says, but I was wondering, what did I do to deserve your presence here? I've been thinking about it, but I could not come to any reasonable reason. What did I do to warrant to have your association here? So he says, one reason I could think of. He says, Paitra Swashraya Prityartam. Because of the affection, Krishna was very affectionate to his Pandavas, to his cousins, Pandavas. And I happen to be a descendant in their line. Even though an unworthy descendant, he has already told, I am a Kshatra Bandhu. So, he says that, even though I am an unfortunate and incompetent descendant of the Pandavas, still, just because I have some connection with the Pandavas, the Lord has become merciful upon me and He has sent you here. Otherwise, I can't think of any reason, I can't think of any qualification from my part that would have attracted your presence here. So, one should not think that this is a mood that is shown by Parikshit Maharaj only after he garlanded Chalikrishi. Sometimes, if someone engages in a very abominable activity, which he should not be engaged in, then it leads to a sense of generally, mode of ignorance can, he becomes vulnerable to mode of ignorance. So one starts becoming very depressed, feeling depressed, what did I do? And slowly, slowly it degrades into sort of low self-esteem and depression like that. And one feels that, oh, Prabhuji, mere se hoga hi nahi, you know, I am not capable of doing it. You know, that kind of, you know, I am so fallen, like that. It may not be a very healthy thing, you know, you can immediately find out whether it is impelled by a genuine feeling of repentance or has it, you know, degraded into a mode of ignorance. So, one should not think that because Parikshit Maharaj has garlanded Shamikrishi, he feels like this, that, you know, only Pandavas are great, I am not qualified like that. Not like that. Even when he was at the prime of his career as a king, when he used to, the description is there in Bhagavatam, when he used to go out incognito to look out for how his citizens were ruling. So, what are they discussing about my rule? So he used to hear all his citizens would always discuss about the Pandavas. Because the Pandavas had the association of Krishna and such intimate association of Krishna. Because of the Pandavas, all the citizens, they felt that they were so fortunate because they got to see the pastimes of Krishna. So wherever Parikshit Maharaj went, the evening, in every house, there would be discussion about the Pandavas and Krishna. Ideally, the current king and his rule must be discussed. Generally, if you go elsewhere outside, they will be discussing about Modi and Fadnavis or whatever. All these things only they will be discussing. Generally, you won't find anyone discussing about what P.V. Narasimha Rao did or Umar, the past. Everyone would talk about the current leader. So here, all of them are speaking about the past leaders, the five Pandavas. Not because of their political shrewdness, but because they were contemporaries to Krishna and Krishna was very affectionate to them. Saratya Parashada Sevana Sakya Dautya Virasananu Gamanas Tavana Pranaman Snigdeshu Pandushu Jagat Pranatim Stavishnur Bhaktim Karotan Ripatis Charanaravinde. So as soon as he would hear it, he would feel not very distressed. Why they are not speaking about me? He would feel so wonderful. He would feel so inspired in his own bhakti. Bhaktim karotin ripatis charanaravinde. He would go back and redouble his devotional service after hearing such amazing Krishna katha about the kind of association that his ancestors had with Krishna. So that was Parikshit Maharaj, which is very difficult. Even Dasharath Maharaj, it is mentioned in Ramayana that when he decides to coronate Lord Ram, so he asked the opinion of his priests, Vashishta and others, and they say it's a very good decision. You should go ahead and do it without any delay. And then later when it was announced to the public, they were celebrating like never before. Never before had Ayodhya seen such a celebration. And after announcing this, even Dasharath Maharaj felt very, on one side he was happy that Ayodhya was very wholeheartedly welcoming Lord Ram, but on the other side he was wondering, what did I do wrong? What wrong did I do? Why they are so eager to have me out? Like that he was feeling. But Parikshit Maharaj was not feeling like that. For him it was the exact opposite case. Even though he had been ruling for a long time, still they were talking about the previous rulers only. But he was so inspired. So he had that natural quality. He was naturally very happy considering the greatness of his own ancestors. Even though Parikshit Maharaj, according to Bhagavatam, was more exalted than the Pandavas. It is mentioned that Pandunam Mana Vardhana, first canto says. The Shaunakadi Rishi says that he increased the honor of the Pandavas. So if someone is a very good king, he can at the most maintain the honor of his very exalted ancestors. But to increase it, one has to be greater. And we see this we saw last time when you were here, we saw the how he was saved within the womb of his mother. When Ashwatthama released six Brahmastras, the Lord took care of five of them using his Sudarshan Chakra, but he went inside the womb of Uttara personally and gave personal darshan to Parikshit Maharaj within the womb. He could have as well neutralized the sixth also using his Sudarshan Chakra. But he knew that a special personality is there inside. So he personally gave darshan. So Parikshit Maharaj was no ordinary personality. Out of his great humility, natural humility, he is speaking this way. Nunam Bhagavato Brahman Griheshu Grihamedinam Nalakshate Hyavastanam Api Godohanam Kochit. O Brahmana, Nunam Bhagavato Na Kochit Lakshate. You do not stay at one place. Griheshu Grihamedinam. Of the attached householders, Godohanam Avastanam. Even for the time it takes to milk a cow. The same thing Shaunakadri Rishi also said. Api godohana matram hi griheshu grahamedinam avekshate mahabhagas tirti kurvam stadashramam. So they said they were very astonished. And Parikshit Maharaj is astonished for the same reason. And he gives the same example also, analogy. You never stay at a place for longer than it takes to milk a cow. And I'm feeling so astonished that you are choosing to stay here for such a long time. Somehow, Parikshit Maharaj intuitively knew that Sukadeva Goswami was going to stay here for a very long time. Otherwise, after hearing, and he would have said, thank you very much and left. So, because Parikshit Maharaj to Sukadeva Goswami has not spoken for a very long time. He has just started speaking to Sukadeva Goswami. So, here he is telling that you have come here at this time, exactly at the time when I have been cursed to die within 7 days. What is the chance? You generally do not stay at a place for longer than it takes to milk a cow. It doesn't say that he comes there to drink that milk. So, Godohana Matram is a unit of time. Like traditional days, you know, they have this various traditional units of time. Like I give this example, when someone wants to go from Goshala to temple, people ask, how long does it take to go from Goshala to temple? They say, 2 rounds. You know, Shuru Karo first round, by the time the second round ends, you are in the temple. So, Tirthi Kurvams Tadashramam, he used to go there to enlighten them. That was the purpose for which Sukadeva Goswami would go. And that too, he would stay there only for such a short time and then leave. Anyatate avyakta gatir darshanam na katam ganam nitaram mriyamananam samsiddhasya vaniyasaha. Otherwise, how is it possible for men like us, especially at the moment of death, you have the whole world to move. And it's not like Sukadeva Goswami's itinerary was, posted on the internet 6 months before. Next 6 months, on this day he'll be here, on this day he'll be giving class here. You know, it's not like, 6 months itinerary was already made. He used to come, walk in the southern direction, stop at a home, and it's not necessary that he will continue in the southern direction. He may start moving in the eastern direction. So that's what he says. Anyata te avyakta gate. Aapka gati avyakta hai. In what direction you will move is no one knows. If in some house he is standing and 3-4 houses down the line, if they get their aarti plate ready to receive Sukadeva Goswami, they might be in for a surprise. He might take the other direction and walk in a different direction. Or he may walk back in the same direction from where he came. So therefore, his movements were unknown. So what was the chance that such a personality would exactly come to that place where Parikshit Maharaj was getting ready to prepare himself for death, and exactly at the time when he was cursed to die in 7 days. And he stayed there for all the 7 days. which was very much uncharacteristic of his nature. He would not stay in one place for longer than it takes to milk a cow. So he says that anyata. Why he uses the word anyata here? Otherwise. I am not qualified. Except for that faint connection to the Pandavas, I don't see any other reason. Otherwise, how is it possible for you to be here? Anyata, otherwise how is it possible for men like us to have the association of people like you? So, then he, after establishing this mood very nicely, then he asked the question. Atat prachyami samsiddhim yoginam paramam gurum purushasyeha yatkaryam mriyamanasya sarvata. I ask, atat prachyami yoginam paramam gurum. I ask the supreme guru of the yogis. So what do I ask? Samsiddhim. What is complete perfection? Yatkaryam sarvata. And what is to be done at all times? Mriyamanasya purushasya. And especially what is to be done at the time of death? So, two questions are asked. What is to be done at all times? And what is to be done at the time of death? So, sometimes we may think that Bhagavatam, like sometimes we say that Krishna consciousness is not art of living, but it is art of living, like that. But it is very much the art of living also. And sometimes in the same line we hear that Bhagavatam speaks about how to live, but it does not speak about how to live. Sometimes we hear something like that. But you see the question that Parikshit Maharaj asks. He asks, what is yatkaryam sarvata? What is to be done at all times? And what is to be done at the time of death? Both questions are asked. So Bhagavatam as well teaches how to live and how to leave, both. Because the nature of bhakti is yatsyat sarvatra sarvada. That's how the Supreme Lord himself defines bhakti. Bhakti is the process that can be performed by everyone at all times, under all circumstances. So Bhagavatam teaches that bhakti. Anarthopasham sakshat bhakti yogi madokshade lokasya janato vidvams chakre satvata samhita. So Bhagavatam is there to offer as devotional service. And devotional service is a way of life. It's a way of living. It's not a way of just living. Of course, Krishna says that antakalecha mameva smaran muktva kalevaram yat prayati samadbhavam yati nastyatra samshaya. When he remembers me at the time of death, he can come back to me about of this, there is no doubt. He talks about remembering Krishna at the time of death, or and then he says that whatever you remember at the time of death, you attain it. And then later he says, tasmat, therefore. So therefore means what you should say? Therefore remember me at the time of death, he says, he should say. Ideally, if you want to attain me. But he says, tasmat, sarveshu kaleshu mamanusmara yudhyacha. Therefore, at all times you remember me and fight. So, therefore, if you remember me at all times, then at the time of death you will remember me. So, you cannot have a process that is a different process for teaching you how to live and a different process to teach you how to leave. Because you will never know when that death will come. So therefore, in Bhagavad Gita also, Krishna is quite clear, the process to live is the process to live. The process to live is remember me at the time of death, and to achieve it, while you are living, at all times remember me. So therefore, in answer to Parikshit Maharaj's question, Shukadeva Goswami is not going to say, first let me speak about the process which one should follow while living, and now I will say the process one should follow while living. It's one seamless flow, the rest of Bhagavatam. Because what is the process for living is the process for living also. So that's what he is going to speak now. And also, in one sense, if you see, this is a very generic question that Shukadeva Goswami is asking. This is not a very specific question. Even though so many other sages had assembled there, and many of them were senior to Parikshit Maharaj, and Parikshit Maharaj could have thought, oh, now I have asked a question, now let me give a chance to others also to ask a question, because I am just one of the audience. Because there were so many other sages who had assembled, a long list of names is given, quite exalted people. Parikshit Maharaj never gave a chance for anyone else to ask a question. In that assembly, does anyone else other than Parikshit Maharaj and Shukadeva Goswami speak? No one else. Because it was very well known that Shukadeva Goswami had come for Parikshit Maharaj only. Parikshit Maharaj very clearly knew it. It was a very clear conversation only between the two of them. Even though others had assembled. So, Parikshit Maharaj could have taken advantage of this opportunity and asked very specific questions which are relevant for his own deliverance. Especially, one would not accuse him because he has just 7 days to live. It would not be wrong on his part, it would not be selfish on his part to ask more specific questions which would help his own deliverance. But he asks a very generic question. In general, what is the best path to be followed by everyone and by people who are getting ready to die? He might have as well asked, my dear Shukadeva Goswami, tell me in essence what I should do. What I should do to perfect my life, you tell me. And Shukadeva Goswami would have spoken. But Parikshit Maharaj asks a very generic question. So which means, such exalted personalities, even at the time of death, they don't have selfish thoughts. That is the nature of great personalities. They are not absorbed in their own problems, even at the time of death. So, in the first canto, first chapter, there is this verse. First verse, the Sutta Goswami, Vyasadeva mentions, Naimisha Animisha Kshetre Rishaya Shaunakadaya Satram Swargaya Lokaya Sahasra Samamasata. 1.1.4. In the Naimisharanya Kshetra, all the sages, the Shaunakadirishis had assembled to perform a very long sacrifice for the benefit of all humanity. So, Prabhupada, in the purport of that verse, he says that the great sages are always anxious to do good to the people in general. And as such, the sages headed by Shaunaka and others assembled at this holy place of Naimisharanya with a program of performing a great and continuous chain of sacrificial ceremonies. Forgetful men do not know the right path of peace and prosperity. However, the sages know it well, and therefore, for the good of all men, they are always anxious to perform acts which may bring peace, bring about peace in the world. They are sincere friends to all living entities, and at the risk of great personal inconvenience, they are always engaged in the service to the service of the Lord for the good of all people. So he says that Prabhupada defines who is a Rishaya Shaunakadaya. Rishi means who? He says, a Rishi means he is not concerned about his own problems. He is concerned about problems of everyone. He is thinking about benefit of all. He is not selfish. Second, he says that not only is he concerned about the problems of others, but he is concerned about solutions to those problems. Because otherwise, we may say, either ye problem hai, either ye problem hai, either ye problem hai, matlab, fine, but what is the solution? Are you concerned, are you thinking about the solution? So, they are not only concerned about the problems, but they are concerned about the solutions. But we might have the perfect solutions, and we may say, oh, okay, this is the solution. Now you implement it. But we may not take any responsibility for it. But here, Prabhupada says, they are sincere friends to all living entities, and at the risk of great personal inconvenience, they are always engaged in the service of the Lord for the good of all people. So, it is, so these sages, they not only have solutions, but they are themselves willing to apply those solutions despite great personal inconvenience. By taking a lot of personal inconvenience, they are willing to spend their time to implement those solutions. So therefore, once His Grace Radha Gopinath Prabhu was mentioning, so this is something that we should meditate on. This is the mission that we have embarked on. As renunciants, this is what we should think about. We can't just be absorbed in our own problems. You know, this is my health problem, this is my family problem, which might be there, we may have to address them, but we can't become absorbed in these problems only. We have to think about public welfare, we have to think about welfare of everyone. And the highest public welfare is giving Krishna consciousness. We can't just give it, here you go, Krishna consciousness is the solution. That doesn't work like that. We may have to take up lot of personal inconvenience to facilitate their practice of that Krishna consciousness also. And take care of them, support them, create support systems, all at the cost of our personal inconvenience. So, this is the life of sadhu. So, that's what, even while dying, Parikshit Maharaj is thinking about public welfare. He is asking in the form of, by asking a question, it is very generic and applicable to all people at all times. So, that's the mood of a devotee. Then, he clarifies his question. Yat shrotavyam ato japyam yat kartavyam prabho smartavyam bhajaniyam va brohi yadva viparyayam. O Master, please tell me, nribhihi yat shrotavyam ato japyam smartavyam bhajaniyam va yadva viparyayam. He says, what should men hear? What should men chant? What should men remember? Whom should they worship? And bruhiyadva viparyayam, what they should not chant, what they should not hear, what they should not remember, and whom they should not worship. So if I have to elaborate on my question, I want you to speak on these subject matters. So please speak about these subject matters. So the whole of the rest of Bhagavatam is an answer to these questions asked by Parikshit Maharaj about what is the worthy subject matter to hear, chant, discuss, remember, and with all that, who is that personality who is supposed to be worshipped, why we should worship him, what are the benefits of worshipping, who are the various personalities who worshipped, how was their life, that's the rest of Bhagavatam. So, we'll take a short break, 5-minute break, and then we will continue further, starting from the first verse of the second canto, and see how Shukadeva Goswami responds to these very pivotal questions asked by Parikshit Maharaj. So, we'll take a short break.
All had one question. Why their name of cantos are different? as per Jagat Diaries in current name?
I don't know.
Like I heard the statement, what Krishna could not see in the Bhagavad Gita, he said it to Uddhava. So in what sense is that true, Puruji? In the sense, why is this statement made? I heard the statement twice. What Krishna could not say to Arjuna in the Bhagavad Gita has been because of time constraints or something. I mean, this is a statement I heard. I mean
Krishna in one of the Bhagavatam
classes, I heard.
Krishna is time. If you wanted, you could have expanded it and spoken. So that could not have been a reason. It's Bhagavad Gita is little more preliminary, and Uddhava Gita is much more detailed, and it goes in lot of elaboration is there.
More
much more elaborate. Okay, so we'll start the first verse. Shri Shuka Uvacha Variyaneshate Prashna Krito Loka Hitam Dupa Atmavit Sammadaripum Sam Shrotavyadishu Yaparaha. So here it is mentioned, Pondrupa, O King, Variyan Te Krito Esha Prashna. This question that you have asked is most excellent. Variyan. Shrotavyadishu Yaparaha. In fact, this is the best amongst any question that can ever be asked. Why? Because he says, Loka Hitam. Because hidden behind these questions is a desire for benefit of everyone. Atmavit Sammata. And this is not just my opinion, but this is the opinion of all the great learned souls. They would accept, they would agree with my conclusion that this is the best person, this is the best question that anyone can ask. Mainly because of the intention of Lokahitam. So here you can see that till now Parikshit Maharaj had glorified Shukadeva Goswami. But Shukadeva Goswami is also now appreciating Parikshit Maharaj for asking such relevant questions. So there was a tremendous feeling of mutual appreciation between the speaker and the hearer and the person who was asking the question, which is not something very commonly observed in this material world. So similar cases where you can see throughout Srimad Bhagavatam, where when Parikshit, when Prithu Maharaj, when he receives the four Kumaras and he asks a similar series of questions, and in response the four Kumaras say, Sadhu Prishtam Maharaja Sarva Bhuta Hitatmana Bhavata Vidusha Chapi Sadhunam Matiridrashi. A very similar verse. Sadhu Prishtam Maharaja Variyan Eshate Prashna. Same meaning. Sarva Bhuta Hitatmana Krito Loka Hitam Dhita. Loka Hitam. Same meaning. Bhavata Vidusha Chapi, you are really very learned. And Shukadeva Goswami mentioned the same thing in a slightly different way. Learned people would agree with my opinion. Atmavit Sammata. Learned people would agree that this is the best question, which means you are also a learned person. That's what it means. Sadhunam Matiridrishi. In fact, the minds of the devotees are of this nature. Like that he is mentioning. So there is always a very tremendous feeling of mutual appreciation between the person who is asking the question. Only such appreciation can bring out fruitful discussions. Otherwise, if the person who is questioning is just questioning for the purpose of just either distracting or just making his presence felt or just like that, and asking all kinds of irrelevant details and questions like that, then it sort of just doesn't create the proper mood to have any fruitful discussion. So, like that. So here, Srila Prabhupada writes here in the purport, even the questions asked by devotees should be heard, chanted and remembered. Why? Because since Krishna is the original Supreme Personality of Godhead, any question about Him is also original and perfect. Such question and answers elevate one to the transcendental position. And Prabhupada gives an example. He says, there you are, Krishna also mentions in the Bhagavad Gita, Janma karma cha me divyam evam yo vetti tatvatah tatva deham punarjanma neti mameti so Arjuna. Just by hearing the pastimes of Krishna about the birth and activities of Krishna, one can attain liberation. Then Prabhupada compares Krishna Katha to Ganges water. Wherever Ganga flows, it purifies the land and the person who bathes in it. Similarly, Krishna Katha purifies the place, the hearer, the speaker, the inquirer and all others involved. Like that Prabhupada glorifies Krishna Katha. And actually if you see, this is a verse translation from the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. Vasudeva Katha Prashna Purusham Stentunatihi Vaktaram Pruchakam Shrotrim Tatpada Salilam Yata. Just as the Ganga, Tatpada Salilam Yata, just as the Ganga which emanates from the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord purifies the three worlds, Bhur, Bhur, Swarga. Vasudeva Katha Prashna, questions and discussions in relation to Vasudev, Trin Purushan Punati, it purifies three people. Vaktaram, the speaker, Pritchakam, the inquirer, Shrotrim, and the hearer. Tattada Salilamyata, just like Ganga, which purifies three places. The upper, middle, and the lower planetary systems are purified by Ganga. Similarly, questions and discussions related to Krishna have the potency to purify the speaker, the inquirer and the hearer. So like that, if you see, many, many of Prabhupada's purports are direct translations. But unfortunately, we have not very scrutinizingly read the scriptures. So we can't identify. So many times it may seem like Prabhupada is writing his own opinions, his own analogies. But even analogies, if you see, Prabhupada never generally makes up analogies. Many of the analogies are like traditional analogies that Prabhupada uses. And many of the purports are direct translations of many, many verses. But unfortunately, we don't know those verses. Or even if we have studied and heard, we don't remember them. So therefore, it more or less seems like Prabhupada is writing his own opinions everywhere. But in most cases, it's not the case. Prabhupada is actually writing direct translations. Sometimes he quotes the verse, sometimes he just quotes the verse number. Sometimes he says, he mentions the source. In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, sometimes he doesn't say that at all. So therefore, many times you read, and if you don't know the verse, you think it's just Prabhupada writing. But many times it's not the case. Like that. Then he starts answering the question. After appreciating Parikshit Maharaj, Shri Goswami says, శ్రోతవ్యాదీని రాజేంద్ర నృణాం సంతి సహస్రశః అపశ్యతామాత్మతత్వం గృహేషు గృహమేదినాం. ఓకే, శ్రోతవ్యాదీని సహస్రశః సంతి. యాక్చువల్లీ యూ ఆస్క్ మీ వాట్ షుడ్ బి హర్డ్, వాట్ షుడ్ బి రిమెంబర్డ్, వాట్ షుడ్ బి చాంటెడ్, హూమ్ షుడ్ బి వర్షిప్డ్, వాట్ షుడ్ నాట్ బి చాంటెడ్, వాట్ షుడ్ నాట్ బి హర్డ్ ఎక్సెట్రా. ఫస్ట్ ఐ విల్ ఆన్సర్ ద సెకండ్ పార్ట్ ఆఫ్ ద క్వశ్చన్ అబౌట్ వాట్ షుడ్ నాట్ బి హర్డ్, వాట్ షుడ్ నాట్ బి చాంటెడ్, వాట్ షుడ్ నాట్ బి రిమెంబర్డ్. ఇస్ శ్రోతవ్యాధిని సహస్రశ సంతి. యాక్చువల్లీ దర్ ఆర్ థౌజండ్స్ ఆఫ్ టాపిక్స్ టు డిస్కస్. ఆత్మతత్వం అపశ్యతాం ఋణం ఫర్ దోస్ పీపుల్ హూ హ్యావ్ నథింగ్ టు డూ విత్ ద గోల్ ఆఫ్ లైఫ్, హూ హ్యావ్ నథింగ్ టు ఎంక్వైర్ అబౌట్ ఆత్మతత్వ. ఫర్ దోస్ హూ హ్యావ్ నథింగ్ టు డూ అబౌట్ ఆత్మతత్వ, దర్ ఆర్ థౌజండ్స్ ఆఫ్ టాపిక్స్ టు డిస్కస్. హూ ఆర్ దీస్ పీపుల్? గృహేషు గృహమేదినాం. గృహేషు గృహమేదినాం మీన్స్ దోస్ హూ ఆర్ అటాచ్డ్ టు ద హౌస్ and commit five types of violence. Elsewhere, the word grihamedi is translated as attached materialist. It does not generally refer to a particular ashram. It refers to a mentality. Once Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur wrote an article about who is a matvasi and who is a matmedi, as in grihastha and matastha and matmedi, just as in grihastha and grihamedi. Matmedi, he says, is one who is just attached to the facilities of the offered by the mat, but is not willing to extend himself for the benefit of others, the purpose for which he has joined the mat. That is a matamedi. The word medhi comes from the word medhra, which also means violence. So a grihamedi is one who irresponsibly stays at house and while continuing to perform all kinds of violence. Prominently the five kinds of violence that Prabhupada mentions in Bhagavad Gita also. While using the ukhal, some insects may get trapped, and atta chakki, and there also some insects can get trapped and they may die. Water pots are there. At that time also if something falls into that water pot. This morning only I was going around our flower garden, and they had, we were giving water, and in one vessel they left some water, and somehow some chameleon slipped into it and fell into that water. It could not get out, so it died. So in one sense, if the person would have probably emptied that water, maybe it could have survived. Some unintentional kind of violence you become a cause of. And the fifth is while you are brooming the floor also, unintentionally many insects may die. So a person who lives such a life committing violence all for his selfish needs, but at the same time does not accept responsibilities of a responsible householder, such a person is called a grihamedi. Medhi also refers to the medhistamba. Medhistamba is one in which a cow is tied. Cow or a bull is tied. So it can graze around that area. But it cannot go beyond that. And the center of that grazing is that pole, medhistamba. So similarly, a grihamedi is one whose activities are centered around the house. Whatever he does, he goes somewhere. Are ye place mein ghar ke liye kuch kirana milega kya? Or he sees some cloth shop, oh, should I get some clothes for my children? Like that, you know, basically all his activities are centered around the house. So similarly, so therefore such a person is called Grihamedi. Whereas a Grihastha is one who may stay at home, but you know, dedicate himself to his spiritual emancipation, his spiritual progress, and the progress and the spiritual progress of those who are dependent on him. That is a Grihastha. So Prabhupada talks about, differentiates them in his purport also. So Prabhupada writes, there are two types of householders, the Grihastha and Grihamedis. The Grihastha is one who has wife and children, but he lives a very transcendental life. But a Grihamedi is one who lives for the benefit of the family members only, and thus he is envious of other such Grihamedis. This envy sometimes extends to the community and nation, which means sometimes the cow may be tied to a smaller rope, sometimes to a very long rope. It has little extra space to graze around. So from a householder to a nationalist to a, you know, humanitarian, like that. Such Grihamedis, because of a poor fund of knowledge, have hundreds of nonsense topics to discuss about. Thus they don't inquire into the subject matter of birth, death, old age and disease and other such transcendental topics. But to go back home, back to Godhead, one has to hear, chant and remember Krishna's name, fame, qualities, pastimes, etc., which are absolute in nature. So ultimately, one should develop that jigyasa about living a more meaningful life. And in more specifically, a life dedicated to, dedicated for one's spiritual progress. So basically this verse is emphasizing this point that for those who are absorbed in these lower subject matters, absorption in higher things will never come. They will keep themselves absorbed in the lower subject matters all the time. How do they spend their time? Nidrahriyate naktam vyavayena chavavayah divaschartehaya rajan kutumba baraninava. O king, vayaha hriyate naktam. They waste, that their night time is wasted. Nidraya va vyavayena, either in sleeping or in sex life. Divascha artaihaya, and their daytime is spent in desiring material objects. For what purpose? Kutumba baranena va. For supporting their family members. So therefore, this is how they spend their time throughout the day. So Prabhupada here writes in the purport, modern human civilization is based on the principles of these activities only. Nidra ariyate naktam yavayena chavavayah divascha artaihaya rajan kutumba baranena va. But the Bhagavad school doesn't support this. Human life is meant for tattva jigyasa and making a solution to end the miseries of life. That is the purpose of human life. This is another translation that Prabhupada is talking about. Which verse? Anyone remembers? Human life is meant for tattva jigyasa. Kamasya nendriya peitur labo jiveta yavata jivasya tattva jigyasa narto yasya karma bihi. Like that. Here also Prabhupada has not mentioned the verse number, but it's directly a translation. So, this is how they spend their time. they are completely absorbed in these things. But one may say that this doesn't sound very exciting though. At night, engage in sleep and sex life, which gives some momentary pleasure, and throughout the day slog for it, spend 10, 12, 14 hours working in the office and commuting to the office, commuting back from the office, it doesn't sound very exciting. Why would someone want to do it day in and day out? They could give it all up and be peaceful. Why is it that they are interested in doing these things? This doesn't sound very exciting. So, Shukadeva Goswami says, no, they have a very important impetus there. Something, a very strong impetus, they are getting to perform these apparently not so exciting activities, day in and day out. In fact, throughout their lifetime. What is that impetus? He says, Deha patyakalatradishu atma sainyesha satswapi tesham pramatto nidanam pashyan apina pashyati. Pramattaha. Pramattaha means they are deeply attached. Deha apatya kalatradishu. Deeply attached to his body, children and wife. Who are like atma sainyeshu. He thinks that this is my atma sena. When I get into trouble, they will protect me. So that familial affection goes beyond any reasonable logic, and the person subconsciously starts thinking that my body, my wife, my husband and my children, they will protect me from death. We all feel that somehow. At least good that we have a theoretical understanding, at least that it's not possible. But that is the strong subconscious feeling, because the soul is eternal, trapped in this. So somehow it has to exhibit its constitutional nature. That constitutional nature of the soul is exhibited by this feeling of, I can somehow live eternally. Maybe my son will help me. Maybe my wife. Or maybe this body. Maybe others' bodies are perishable. Maybe my body is different. So that constant conviction that somehow I can live eternally comes from that constitutional nature of the soul. It's eternal. So, and he falsely starts thinking that, here is my army which is going to protect me. Deha, apatya, kalatradishu, atma sainyeshu. Asat swapi, even though they are false, they have seen that you think your son can protect, you are the son of your father. Could you protect your father? Your father was the son of your grandfather. Could he protect the grandfather? No. But then there is a strong sense that somehow my son will protect me. Tesham nidanam pashyan apina pashyati. So therefore such a person, even though the destruction is coming, he cannot see it really coming. So here Srila Prabhupada writes, this verse elaborates on the previous verse, apashyata matma tattvam. Deha apatya kalatra and etc. are all like the army for fighting against time. But they are false and temporary. Asatswapi. But they are false and temporary. As soul has no connection to this body and other objects, still a grihamedi remains inattentive to atma tattvam and very attentive to deha tattvam. Whatever to his body and everything related to the body. because in spite of the experience of death of his predecessors, he doesn't want to examine the matter. Therefore, he is devoured by time. What is that verse? Ahani ahani bhutani gacchantiha yamalayam. Sheshaha stavaram icchanti. Kimascharyam ataparam. Yaksha prashna. To Yudhishthira Maharaj. What is the most amazing thing that you have observed in life? So, Yudhishthira Maharaj says that day in and day out, ahani ahani bhutani gacchantiha yamalayam. A person observes, or people observe everyone going to Yamalaya, which means death. Sheshaha, but still the leftover thing, stavaram icchanti. Somehow I have to live here permanently. Kimascharya matapparam. What could be more amazing than this? This is called Ashabandha. When imposed on, what is Ashabandha? Having intense hope and trust in Krishna's protection. That is Ashabandha, the one who is at the stage of Bhava. But this is the opposite Ashabandha, perverted reflection of that. That somehow my wife, my children, my family, my bank account will protect me. That feeling. The whole material advancement is like the decoration of a dead body. Therefore, the next verse explains how one can conquer this time by becoming a devotee of the Lord who is not attached to the body. So therefore, he has mentioned that therefore, it is not really very wise to spend all of one's time absorbed in the needs of the body and things related to the body and people related to the body. So therefore, for such people who do not have any interest in Atma Tattva, they will have thousands of topics to discuss related to all these things. What is the right thing to do? Shukadeva Goswami says, Tasmat Bharata Sarvatma Bhagavan Ishvaro Harihi Shrottavya Kirtitavyascha Smartavyaschechata Bayam. Rather than thinking that this Atma Sena of Deha Apatya Kalatradishu, they will protect, a person who is truly desiring freedom from fear of samsara, who is truly desiring freedom from the fear of death, what he should do? Bhagavan Ishvaro Harihi Shrottavya Kirtitavyascha Smartavyascha. He should hear about, chant and remember the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Hari. And this Lord Hari is described as Sarvatma, Bhagavan and Ishwara. And Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur says that he is described in these three words to indicate three kinds of people. He says that three types of bhakti are indicated by the words Sarvatma, Bhagavan and Ishwara. So, first it indicates bhakti with a desire for liberation. So, one may perform bhakti. Good enough. One may perform bhakti with a desire for liberation. So, what is his fear? His fear is that, will I get liberation or not? Good enough. So, the fear of a person who is performing bhakti for liberation is that, will I get liberation or not. So for that, he says that yes, you will definitely get liberation, because the person whom you are worshipping is the same Lord which is in the heart of all living entities and giving liberation to so many yogis by meditating on him. So definitely you will get your liberation. That is what is indicated by the word Sarvatma. Second, a Raganuga Bhakta is described. What is the fear of a Raganuga Bhakta? Will I develop that attraction to towards the Supreme Lord or not? Will I get attracted to the Supreme Lord or not? That is the fear of a Raganuga Bhakta. So Sridhar Goswami says, definitely, why not? Lord Hari is Bhagavan. Bhagavan means one who is endowed with the six opulences, Bhagas. So he says that with all his six opulences, he will definitely attract your heart. So don't worry. Here, chant and remember his name, form, pastimes, etc. And your heart will definitely get attracted. And then the third kind is the Vaidhi Sadhana, Vaidhi Sadhaka. What is the fear of a Vaidhi Sadhaka? What is the fear of a Vaidhi Sadhaka? Will my senses ever listen to me? Will I ever be able to control my senses and engage them in the service of the Supreme Lord? So, for how long I will have to suffer with this uncontrolled senses? That is his fear. So, the Lord says, oh, he is Ishwarah. He controls this whole universe. He can as well control your senses. So, don't worry. Give up that fear and hear about, chant and remember the Supreme Lord who is Ishwara. So, if you are a person desiring liberation, don't worry. That liberation is assured because he is Sarvatma. If you are a Raganuga Bhakta, whose fear is if you would develop attraction for the Lord, don't worry, he is Bhagavan. Endowed with all six opulences, he can attract your heart. And if you are a Vaidhi Sadhaka, afraid of controlling your senses, don't worry, he is the controller of this whole universe. He can control your senses also and engage them in his own service. Like that, by using these three qualifiers for the Lord Hari, three kinds of bhakti is indicated, as mentioned by Srila Vishnuacharya Thakur here. So therefore, bhakti is the cause of success for all, be it a yogi, a jnani or a bhakta. By this process, all fear is vanquished and all activities become spiritual and all conceptions of material miseries become vanquished. So therefore, the word tasmad, therefore, but they are asat sena, they can never be atma sanyesho asat swapi, they can really never offer protection from fear. They can really, they cannot really remove the fear of death. But if you really want to overcome this fear, the only way is bhakti, which is characterized by shravanam, kirtanam, smaranam and other limbs. But these three are the first three and most prominent limbs. Hearing, chanting and remembering the name, form, qualities, pastimes of the Supreme Lord. Like that. Then, one may say, Parikshit Maharaj may ask, I asked you for a universal process which everyone could follow. But it seems like you have given me a very sectarian process in answer. because the Shravanam, Kirtanam, Smaranam, they are limbs of Bhakti, Shuddha Bhakti. But not everyone may fall in that category. There are some people who are Karmis, some people who are Jnanis, some people who are Ashtanga Yogis, which is also very tiny. Most people fall outside the Vedic fold only. So therefore, don't you think you should give a process which is universal? You seem to have given a very sectarian process. So in response, Sukadeva Goswami says, Etavan Sankhya Yoga Abhyam Swadharma Parinishtaya Janmalabha Parapamsam Ante Narayana Smritihi. So he says, Etavan Parinishtaya Pamsam. So here Srila Vishnachara Thakur and Prabhupada give slightly different understanding. We'll discuss both. Srila Vishnachara Thakur says that Etavan Sankhya Yoga Abhyam, whether one may be practicing Sankhya Yoga or Yoga Abhyam or Ashtanga Yoga, Swadharma Parinishtaya, or he may be very fixed in performing his Varnashram duties, Karma Yoga, Janma Labaha, by gaining such a birth, because he prapya punya kritam lokam ushitva shashvati sama shuchinam shimatam gehe yoga brishto bijayate. So one's birth also indicates their previous practice in their previous lives. So having attained such a favorable birth, their perfection comes from Narayana Smriti. If at the end they can achieve, they can remember Krishna Anfe by putting a full stop to all the other processes, that is the best. Because to attain any transcendental goal, the Abhideva also has to be completely transcendental. If you want a prayojan which is transcendental, the Abhideva also has to be transcendental. You can't have an Abhideva which is within three modes and hope to attain a destination which is beyond three modes. So all this Ashtanga Yoga, Karma Yoga, Jnana Yoga, they all are Abhidevas within the three modes only. Only Shuddha Bhakti is transcendental. This is very nicely elaborated in Uddhava Gita. Krishna describes. Only Shuddha Bhakti is transcendental. But one may say, then what do you mean? By Jnana Yoga one attains Brahman realization. One achieves Brahman. You mean to say Brahman is material? Because Jnana Yoga is within three modes. Ashtanga Yoga is within three modes. Even Karma Mishra Bhakti is within three modes. Even though the percentage of Bhakti might be higher, but still because of the presence of that karma, it is called, it is, the process is Sattviki. Jnana Mishra Bhakti is Sattviki. Yoga Mishra Bhakti is also Sattviki. So therefore, it cannot give a transcendental goal unless the material part of it is given up at the time of perfection. So a Jnana Yogi, if he is practicing Jnana Yoga to achieve liberation, just before achieving that perfection, he has to give up the jnana part of that. If he doesn't give up, if he is too much attached to it, he will never get liberation. And generally they are not attached also. But he cannot give up the bhakti part of it. But he should give up the jnana part of it. This is described in Bhagavad Gita also. Brahma Bhuta Prasannatma Nashochati Nakangshati Samasarvesha Bhuteshu Madbhaktim Labate Param. After one reaches the Brahma Bhuta stage, self-realized stage, but before achieving that liberation, Mat Param Bhaktim Labate, he attains that Parabhakti. Parabhakti means pure devotion. Why? After giving up the Jnana element. Because after attaining prayojan, there is no need for abhideya, for other practitioners. For us, the abhideya only transforms into prayojan in the perfected form. So practitioners of pure devotion never give up the prayojan, never give up the abhideya, because the abhideya itself is transcendental. Whereas other practitioners have to give up their abhideya, because through that material abhideya, they are aspiring for a transcendental prayojan. So the material part of it has to be given up. Just like, let's say someone has lost their legs, or they have a polio attack, let's say. So they have come to the Janmashtami for participating in the Janmashtami activities. They want to perform the Abhishek ceremony of the Lord. So they have lost both their legs, so they have come with crutches in both the hands. So the crutches can take you till the place where the Abhishek is going to be done. But for performing that Abhishek, you have to give up your crutches. Only then you will be able to hold the conch shell and bathe the Lord. So this assistance of Karma Jnana Yoga along with Bhakti can take you till the door of liberation. But to attain that liberation, you have to give up the crutches of Karma Jnana Yoga. Otherwise, it's not possible. So, in Uddhava Gita, this is described in more detail. Yes, please. It is mentioned that Mat Param Bhaktim Labhate, they attain bhakti, pure bhakti, after giving up the jnana part of it. But that pure bhakti is very weak, because all the while it was taking the heavy support of jnana. So, with that weak bhakti, they can attain transcendence, but only a very weak part of the transcendence, that is Brahman. They cannot attain Bhagavan with that weak bhakti. For attaining Bhagavan, they have to come in touch with a pure devotee, and that weak bhakti has to be nourished. And then they can attain and realize and attain Vaikuntha, realize the personal feature of the Lord. Otherwise, Brahman feature is also transcendental only. To realize it and attain it, one can do it only with, without any material element. So that jnana, Krishna says to Uddhava in 11th canto, jnanam cha mai sanyaset. If one has to attain me in my Brahman feature, jnanam cha sanyaset. One should give up the jnana part. And in another verse in Uddhava Gita, he says, what is that verse? He says, dharman santyajya yasarvan mam bhajet satu sattama. He says, adhyayeva gunan doshan, adhyayeva gunan doshan. Can someone check? Adhyayeva gunan doshan, mayadishtan apiswakan, dharman santyajya yasarvan mam bhajet satu sattama. So it is mentioned that a person perfectly understands the benefit of performing one's varnashram duties, and that how performing varnashram duties one gets lot of piety, or by performing varnashram duties one's heart becomes purified, and the dosha, what are the ill effects of non performing one's prescribed duties, one will gain lot of sinful reactions. After understanding both, he says, dharman santyajya, a person who still gives up his dharma, varnashram dharma, and mam bhajet, and at the end only worships me, satu sattama. Krishna says, O Uddhava, in my opinion, he is the most intelligent. Because ultimately that varnashram duties also have to be given up, because varnashram duties are according to one's moods. So to attain a transcendental goal, one has to give up. Either give up the activity itself or give up faith in those activities. One of the two. Like that. So, here he says, to achieve any transcendental goal which all these karma yogis, jnana yogis and ashtanga yogis are aspiring for, ante, they have to put a full stop to all these other practices and take up to pure bhakti, only then they can attain. But if they are attached to it, then they cannot. That is what he is mentioning here. Etavan Sankhya Yoga Abhyam Sudharma Parinishtaya Janmalabha Parapramsam Ante Narayana Smriti. Ante means they have to put an end to all of that. So which means, for those who have understood what the ultimate goal of life is, the path is one. That is pure bhakti only. But till they figure that out, there may seem to be many paths. But the moment they figure out, they will also figure out that the means to attain it is also one. That's our understanding. That's Bhagavatam's understanding. Is there only one way? Yes and no. Till you figure out what is your destination, what is the ultimate destination, there are many ways. But at some point, if you manage to figure that out, figure what your ultimate goal of life is, then you will realize the path is also one only. There are not many paths. That's what he's indicating here. And Prabhupada's translation, Prabhupada says, the highest perfection of human life achieved either by complete knowledge of matter and spirit, by practice of mystic powers, or by perfect discharge of occupational duty, is to remember the personality of Godhead at the end of life. That's the explanation that Prabhupada gives. So here, Prabhupada here writes in the purport, if jnanis or karmis or yogis become devotees by coming in touch with other devotees, then they do not again perform such activities. There is no need. They attain the success of attaining pure bhakti by giving up jnana, karma and yoga. Ante. Therefore, ante does not mean at the end of life. This is Vishnugada Dhaku's explanation. So eventually they give up and take up to bhakti. Example that is given is there anyone who gave up jnana and took up to bhakti? Four Kumaras. Is there anyone who gave up yoga and took up to bhakti? The Navayogendras. Is there anyone who gave up karma and took up to bhakti? Prachina Barhishat. He did. Like that. So Prabhupada writes, therefore the highest perfection of life is constant remembrance of the Lord. Therefore, one should mold his life in such a way that this goal can be achieved. So the process that is given is constantly hear about. So, which was mentioned in the previous verse. Tasmat Bharata Sarvatma Bhagavan Ishvaro Harihi Shrotavya Kirtitavyascha Smartavyascha Ichata Abhayam. So anything that you want to accomplish at the end, the only means to attain it is keep doing it always. As Krishna says, antakale cha mameva, and then he says, what is the means? Tasmat sarveshu kaleshu mamanusmara. Do you find even that difficult to remember me all the time? He says, simple. Abhyasa. Abhyasa yoga yuktena chetasa nanya gamina. Whatever you cannot naturally do, practice. Arjuna says, O chanchalam hi manak krishna, pramati balavadridam, tasyaham nagraham manye vayari vasu dushkaram. To control the mind is very difficult. O Krishna says, abhyasena tu kaunteya, vairagyena cha grihyate. Keep practicing the right things and try to avoid the obstacles. Try to avoid the unfavorable things. So basically, the solution that Krishna gives is, if something is difficult, keep practicing. It will not start out to be easy. Everything will start out to be difficult only, but keep practicing. So remembering Krishna at the time of death means practicing to remember Krishna during one's lifetime. Like that. So then, they may ask, Parikshit Maharaj may ask, is there any proof for someone who gave up their previous practice in order to attain, in order to practice bhakti? You said that the moment someone understands their goal of life, the ultimate goal of life, one should give up their practice and take up to bhakti, Narayana Smriti. Is there any proof for it? So, he says, yeah, prayena muna yorajan nivritta vidishedataha nairgunyastaram antesma gunanu katane harehe. He is okay. Prayena means generally. Munayaha, the sages, nivritta vidishedataha. Generally, the sages who are beyond rules and prohibitions. This generally refers to the Jnana Yogis or advanced Ashtanga Yogis. They fall in this category. So, it is mentioned that Naiva tasya krite narto na krite neha kaschana Nachasya sarva bhuteshu kaschit artha vipashraya. For such people who have come to the stage of Jnana Yoga, there is nothing that they can gain by performing their prescribed duties, and there is nothing that they lose by non-performance of the prescribed duties. Because the purpose of performing the prescribed duties by Nishkama Karma Yogi is because his heart still has impressions of sense gratification. So by engaging in prescribed duties in a detached way, those impressions are slowly wiped out. Then one reaches the stage of Jnana Yoga or Ashtanga Yoga. So when one already has reached that stage where one's heart is cleared of all those impressions, then there is no need for performing prescribed duties. For a person whose heart is not yet being cleansed, if he gives up his prescribed duties, Varnashram prescribed duties, then his heart will become more and more contaminated because he is giving up the means to cleanse his heart. Of course, this is for those who are qualified for Varnashram. But for those who are qualified for practice of pure devotion, the means for purification of that heart is Cheto Darpana Marjanam Bhav Mahadava Agni Nirvapanam. That is our means. So for those who are fortunate to have received the seed of pure devotion, the means to purify their heart is Shravanam Kirtanam Vishnu Smaranam Pada Sevanam only. They need not depend on the Varnashram duties to purify their heart. That has been never recommended by our acharyas. So, Nivritta Vidishedataha. So, such people are beyond the rules and regulations. Which means they need not rules and regulations of Varnashram. Nairgunyastha, they are completely situated beyond the gunas. Such people, Harer Gunanu Katane Ramantesma. Even such people take pleasure in glorifying the qualities of the Lord. Even though they need not perform any activity to gain anything, but still they choose to perform certain activities. Which means there is something higher that they want to gain. They may, because the performance of Varnashram, you may gain something of this material world. That they have nothing to gain of this material world. Therefore, they do not perform any Varnashram duties. But they have something higher to attain. Therefore, even they are seen to take lot of interest in Harikatha. This proves that even those practitioners of perfection, those who have achieved perfection of Jnana Ashtanga Yoga, even they take pleasure in Krishna consciousness, bhakti. Therefore, bhakti must be higher. That's what the proof that he is giving. Oh, many, many sages are there, as Krishna also says in Bhagavad Gita. Bhavo jnana tapasa puta madbhava magata. What is the starting? Bhavo jnana tapasa. Icha desha sam. What is it? Bhavo jnana tapasa. Starting verse. Vitaraga bhayakrodha manmaya mam upashrita bhavo jnana tapasa puta madbhava magata. So he says that, giving up raga, bhava and krodha, many people by getting purified by this process, they have taken up bhavo jnana tapasa puta madbhava magata. They have attained by nature. Because one wants proof. If you want to you want to implement something. Like for example, we were installing this biogas plant. We wanted to make some modification. Which is little bit latest technology, which someone has been researching on that, and as a result they have come up with this product, with this technology. So we went and we discussed with them, we understood the technology, sounded very good, but immediately we asked, where all this has been implemented? So then you go and meet people and ask their opinion, for how long you have been using this? What are the problems that you face and all that. Everyone wants some proofs before they can go for it, any product. In today's day and age, you customer review, product review, that people see what is the rating, 4.8, 4.9 out of 5, what is that, like that. Everyone wants to purchase a product which has 5 out of 5 rating. So similarly, Parikshit Maharaj also might want to know what is the proof. He said, many, many people have given up their path and they have taken up to pure bhakti. So this proves that the path of pure bhakti, which is characterized by Shravanam, Ketam and Smaranam, must be better than all these other paths. So that's what I am recommending for you. Okay, let's move ahead. Idam Bhagavatam Nama Puranam Brahma Sammitam Aditavandva Paradav Pitardvaitaya Nadaham. So he says that Prayana Munayo, generally there are many sages who fall in this category. That's a very generic answer. Like if I had asked this person, have you installed it somewhere? Bahut jagah pe kiya hai. Kuch to address de do. Give me some address so that we can go and see the installations, speak with the end users and get their reviews. So then he has to give if he has actually done it. So Parikshit Maharaj may ask, many sages is okay, but at least one or two names you can please give me so that I can understand. So he says, take my own example. So Shrivade Goswami gives his own example. Idam Bhagavatam Nama Puranam Brahma Sammitam. He says, previous verse he said, Gunanu Katane Harehe. Harer Gunanu Katana. They also get attracted to Harer Gunanu Katana. I also got attracted. From which book? From Bhagavatam. So he says, idam bhagavatam nama puranam brahma samhitam, this scripture called bhagavatam is brahma samhitam, is equal to the lord himself. Or as Prabhupada says, is equal to the Vedas. That is the meaning of Brahma Samhitam. Aditavan Aham, I learned this scripture Pitur Dvaipayana, from my father Krishna Dvaipayana Vyasa. Dvaparadav. Dvaparadav means at the beginning of the last part of Dvapara Yuga. So even though it may say, oh, that seems like a very not so direct understanding of it. Dvapara Adav means the beginning of Dvapara Yuga. But definitely this happened towards the end of Dvapara Yuga. So many explanations are given. Prabhupada gives many explanations in the purport. Prabhupada says, Prabhupada quotes Jiva Goswami, he says that when you say, when someone looks at a tree, he may say, you see from the beginning of the tree to the end, it is all green. But, you know, he may say that beginning to end, but the beginning of the tree is here, not there. Beginning to end, it should be mentioned that way. But the person who is hearing, the person who is speaking, both know that the beginning of the tree is here only. But in a conventional way, sometimes it is used. So Jiva Goswami is mentioning, this is a typical Vedic convention. Because we are not aware of Vedic conventions, we may say that, oh, this sounds very awkward. Why should you say Dvapara Adav? You should say Dvapara Anta. The meter perfectly fits. Adav or Anta both have the same number of syllables. Dvapara Ante. Like that. So, he says that, oh, so this is a common convention, he says. You can, there is nothing wrong in that. Another thing is Dvapara Adav means, it refers to the, you know, each yuga is flanked by yuga sandhyas. Sandhya and sandhyamsha. Generally, 80% of the whole yuga time is the actual yuga. 10% before and after is called yuga sandhya and yuga sandhyamsha. So this word Adav refers to the Sandhyamsha of Dwapara Yuga. That's another explanation given by Shleshana Sagari Thakur. So either way, we understand that it happened towards the end of Dwapara Yuga. That's the understanding. Okay, let's move ahead.
Parinishtitopi nirgumya uttama shloka leelaya grihita cheta rajarshe akyanam yadadhitavan.
O rajarshe, nirgumya parinishtitopi, even though I was perfectly fixed beyond the gunas. So one may say, take my example. So Darshit Narad may say, what about your example? I don't know your story. Can you please speak your story? I know you are speaking Bhagavatam to me. I know that you are very much attracted to the Supreme Lord. But before that, how you are, how do I know? So he says, oh, before that, Parinishtitopi Nirgunya, I was perfectly fixed in Brahman. Brahman was my goal. And Grihita Cheta, but still my mind became attracted to Uttama Shloka Leelaya, to the pastimes of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Akyanam yadadhitavan, thus I studied under my father very scrutinizingly to understand this subject matter. Because the qualities of the Supreme Lord, the pastimes of the Supreme Lord were so attractive, he heard Aho Bakiyam and he was completely flattered. And Baraha Pedam, one that describes the compassionate nature of Krishna and the other which described his beauty. When he heard both, Shrivadeva Goswami decided, you know, to forget about all this aspiration for Brahman. Let me try to understand this personality. Like that.
So basically, Shukadeva Goswami is giving his own proof. And Prabhupada, writing in the purport, he says, with a poor fund of knowledge, we cannot adjust to the idea of the personality of the absolute truth, and the personal activities of the Lord are deplored by the less intelligent impersonalists. But reasons and arguments, together with the transcendental process of approaching the absolute truth, help even the staunch impersonalists to become attracted to the personal activities of the Lord. So there must be some reasons, some arguments they have to be presented, but that in itself is not sufficient. You know, they must get the transcendental process of approaching the absolute truth through the process of bhakti. When that is not there, then mere reasons and arguments cannot convince anyone. So that's what Prabhupada is mentioning here in the purport. Tadahante abhidasyami mahapaurushiko bhavan yasya shraddada tamasho syan mukunde matisati. Tad ahamte abhidasyami. Now whatever I received from my father, I will share that same thing with me, with you. Bhavan mahapaurushikah. Even though you are a very exalted devotee of the Supreme Lord, you are a great personality. Yasya shraddhagatam. And what do you stand to gain by hearing this from me? If you faithfully hear this, mukunde matisati ashusyat, you will be able to quickly fix your pure mind on Krishna. So, that's what he is telling, that I will give you the same thing, but you are a very exalted personality. But nevertheless, I have been put into this situation. So, Shukadeva Goswami perfectly knew under what circumstances Parikshit Maharaj had come there. He had just garlanded Shamikrishi with a dead snake. Something which even a common person knows is very abominable act. Being the king, this was certainly not expected of Parikshit Maharaj. So, it's not that Shukadeva Goswami is thinking, you know, I know what kind of an abominable act you have performed. Come sit here, I will deliver you from your sinful inclinations. Not like that. Shukadeva Goswami was perfectly aware of the status of Parikshit Maharaj. So he is addressing him as Mahapaurushiko. You are certainly a very great exalted personality. So Prabhupada here writes in the purport, in the Vedic system, knowledge is transferred by the process of Avaroha Panta. Avaroha Panta means descending. It is generally the key of Avaroha Panta is pleasing the Guru. You please the Guru and Upadekshanti te jnanam jnaninas tattva darshina. So, the word Upadekshanti means give everything that one has. Like, I was there at Kanpur one time and His Grace Devakinandan Prabhu was commenting on this word Upadekshanti, and he spoke a story about one of the rishis, the brother of Vasishta, you know, how he could eat everything, and anyway, that story apart, he says that generally when someone sits to honor prasadam, and when someone is serving the prasadam, the Vedic etiquette is that all items are served just once, maybe except for rice. It's served just once. That exception I am giving because I cannot conceive of how someone but anyway, but every item is served just once, and in a, if you are sitting in a, you know, pankti, whatever is left over, the last person has to be served and the bucket has to be emptied. So therefore the last person, so that act of emptying that is called upadikshanti, which means the person who is serving does not want to keep anything. He wants to give out everything. Upadekshanti. And another example he gave is, he was describing which season, do you remember? He was speaking about the seasons of Vrindavan. He was speaking about some, which ritu was he speaking about? Which ritu comes after rainy season? Sharad Ritu. So Sharad Ritu, in the Sharad Ritu, what happens is that one very heavy rain comes after the rainy season gets over. The Sharad Ritu rain, last thing, jo bhi bacha kucha hai, sab kuch, you know, it showers and goes. After that, there is no rain. So that last rain, depending on whatever is the leftover water amount, it could be a very heavy rain. With all kind of wind and everything, it will come and, you know, upadekshanti. That is another example that he was giving. So the spiritual master, if he is pleased by the disciple, then his mode is upadekshanti. Whatever I have, I want to deliver everything to you. Like that. So Prabhupada is quoting here that the Vedic system, the means of knowledge transfer is avaroha panta. Means you please the guru and upadekshanti te jnanam jnaninas tattva darshanam. It is not like modern science which can be understood by research. So you cannot research and find out anything in Vedic science. It just descends by grace. But Prabhupada says, but avaroha panta doesn't mean magic, where the guru transfers through an electric current. You know, Prabhupada is referring to Ramakrishna Paramahamsa, where he touched Vivekananda and suddenly, you know, there was some kind of an electric shock and he fainted and he woke up and he started crying. People are like, why you are crying? He said, I have given all that I had to Vivekananda, now I am left with nothing. So, he says that the even though it is avaroha panta, grace, but that does, it's not this kind of grace. He says, there is reasonable explanation of the scriptures by the guru. Even though it is avaroha panta and grace, but that grace also comes through reasonable explanation. It's not that you cannot ask any doubt and you cannot get it clarified. Everything comes by magical transfer. It's not like that. But the reception by the disciple is not exactly through the intellect. Prabhupada keeps balancing. It is avaroha panta, but avaroha panta does not mean magical transfer. There must be reasonable explanation by the guru. Even though the guru may explain, but the reception is not through intellect, Prabhupada says. It's not just through intellect. But by the submissive inquiry and service attitude. That's how the reception is. Like that Prabhupada very nicely explains in the purport. So basically here, Sukadeva Goswami is telling that now I will deliver to you the same thing that I received from my father. And by hearing it with faith, your mind will very soon be fixed in on Krishna. Ishvara sadyo hridya varudyate prakritibir shushrushabit tatshanat. So if one, that's in the beginning only Vyasadeva wrote, one who takes shelter of this Bhagavatam, very soon his mind will become fixed in Krishna, like that. Yeah, this very nice point of serving. So, after Vidura, as the initial series of questions, and Maitreya answered in almost 2.5 chapters, he answered all the questions. Then Vidura speaks, explaining if I have understood whatever you have spoken or not. He's telling, Arthabhavam vinischitya pratipasyapi natmanah tam chapi yashmuk charana sevaya aham paranude. He says, my dear Maitreya, whatever you have spoken, I have theoretically understood, but I have not realized whatever you have spoken. But you don't worry, you continue to speak further subject matters, because I know the means to attain that liberation, realization. What is that means? He says, tam chapi yushmat charana sevaya aham paranude. I will achieve that realization by serving your lotus feet. So knowledge can be received by reading, hearing, and realization can be achieved by serving great souls. So that's what Vidura also mentioned to Maitreya. I have understood theoretically, but kuch realization nahi hai. But you may continue to speak. By serving your lotus feet, I will attain that realization. Like that he mentions. Same thing is mentioned here also by Prabhupada. So finally, he has already spoken, you know, for those who are apashyatam atma tattvam, for them there are thousands of subject matters to discuss. Just one second.
Dehapatya kalatradishu atmasanyesha satsvapi tesham pramattaha nidhanam pashyanati na pashyati. Somehow they get this false feeling that my body, my wife, my children, they can protect me. That kind of a false kind of hope they have. They don't see that death coming. And eventually they get consumed by the fear of death. Tasma, therefore, Parikshit Maharaj, if anyone wants to overcome this fear of samsara, tasmat bharata sarvatma bhagavan ishvaro harihi shrotavya kirtitavyascha smartavyascha icchata bhayam. But one may say that this sounds like a very sectarian path that you have given. He says, etavan sankhya yogabhyam sadharma parinishtaya janmalabha parapamsam ante narayana smriti. Yeah, it does sound little sectarian, because for one who has understood the ultimate goal of life, there is actually only one path. But till they reach that understanding, there may seem to be many other paths. Then he says that, so they have, therefore such people have to put an end to their Sankhya, Yoga and Karma, and take up the pure bhakti only when it's possible. So he says, is there any proof? Have people given up their paths and taken up the pure bhakti? He says, oh, prayana munayo rajan. Generally people do that. Nivritta vidishe rataha. Nairgunyasta ramantesma gunanu katane harehe. Can we give some more specific example? He gives his own example. Parinishtitopi nairgunya uttama shloka lilaya. Grihipacheta Rajarshi Akyanam Midaditavan. I studied, I learned, and my heart was completely transformed by this Bhagavatam. Idam Bhagavatam Nama Puranam Brahma Samhitam. Aditavan Dvaparadav Vitur Dvaipayanadaham. Tadaham Te Abhidasyami. I am going to give you that same Bhagavatam, O Parikshit Maharaj. Yasya Shraddha Dagam Ashu Syan Mukunde Matisati. And by taking sincere shelter of this Bhagavatam, your mind will become completely fixed in Krishna. Then the question arises, you have given me three paths, Shravanam, Kirtanam, Smaranam. Shukadeva Goswami says, of these three, Shravanam is the most, sorry, Kirtanam is the most potent. Etam nirvidyamananam icchata makuto bhayam yoginam ritanirnitam harer namanu kirtanam. He says, Harer Nama Anukirtanam. The prefix Anu can mean following after, or the prefix Anu can also mean continuous. So, Prabhupada gives the first meaning and Vishnajaya Dagur gives the second meaning. Harer Nama Anukirtanam, continuous chanting of the holy name. Harer Nama Anukirtanam, chanting of the holy name. Prabhupada gives constant chanting also. So, Anu's both meanings are covered in Prabhupada's explanation. Constant chanting of the holy name after the ways of great authority. So, both Anu are there. So, this is Harir Nama Anu Anu Kirtanam. Both Anus are there. So, constant chanting of the holy name is Nirmitam, has been prescribed for Nirvidyamananam, for devotees who have no material desires. Icchatam akutobayam, for those who desire liberation and material elevation, and yoginam, and for those who are satisfied with the self. Whatever may be one's practice, the solution is Harer Namanu Kirtanam. Continuous chanting of the holy name, following the example set by the great acharyas. So he says that, Shukadeva Goswami concludes by telling that this is the best way to spend one's time, either during one's living or at the time of death. So, Harir Namanu Kirtanam is the topmost. So, here it is mentioned, the word Nirmitam indicates, by using the word Nirmitam, Shukadeva Goswami indicates, oh, this is not my personal opinion. This is the conclusion of great personalities and the scriptures. Like that. So Prabhupada writes also chanting is for everyone. It's for nirvidyamananam, icchatam, akutobayam and yoginam. And Prabhupada says, depending on their desires, they will get results accordingly. Okay. So, whoever performs bhakti, worship of the Lord, they will get the result of their worship. Which means, whatever they identify as the prayojan, that they will get. So, for example, when we worship the Supreme Lord, at the perfected stage, we will get prema. And all the anarthas will be removed. Kama, krodha, lobha, moha, madha, matsarya, and desire for material enjoyment, desire for liberation, everything will be removed. Whereas, when a Jnana Mishra Bhakta, who desires liberation, when he worships the Supreme Lord, the Lord will fulfill that desire or remove that desire? When a Jnana Mishra Bhakta worships the Supreme Lord with a desire for liberation, will he fulfill that desire or remove that desire? Fulfill. We also have some desires for liberation, right? Desires
desire to overcome miseries and all that is there. So will he fulfill or remove it? Why not there, why here? Why would he not purify there? And why he would purify here? That's the point. So, there are desires, same point that we discussed last time. There are desires on the level of Shraddha, there are desires on the level of Swabhava. If the desire is on the level of Shraddha, he fulfills it. If the desire is on the level of Swabhava, then he removes it. Because whatever desire is on the level of Swabhava, the person, if he has a pure devotional Shraddha, he will identify it as an anartha. Okay? Desire for liberation, a pure devotee or a person on the path of pure devotion, he identifies it as an anartha. So whatever one identifies as an anartha, according to his Shraddha, the Lord will remove it. Whatever one identifies as the prayojan, according to one's Shraddha, the Lord will fulfill it. For one on the path of pure devotion, liberation is, he considers as an anartha, desire for liberation. So the Lord will remove it, even though he may desire for it. Whenever he is put in a difficulty, he may think, difficulties are nikal jaunga to achha hai. But eventually, the Lord will purify that person and remove that desire only. Then he will come to the stage of Swarga, Apavarga, Narakeshwati, Tulyarthi Darshana. He will come to that stage. But for a Jnana Mishra Bhakta, who is aspiring for that liberation? So for him, desire for liberation is not an anartha, it's the prayojan. So whatever one identifies as prayojan, the Supreme Lord will fulfill. Whatever one identifies as anartha, the Supreme Lord will remove. So generally, whatever one identifies as anarthas are on the level of Swabhava. And whatever one identifies as prayojan is on the level of Shraddha. So, therefore Prabhupada also here writes in the purport that whether one is a nirvidyamananam or an ichchatam or a ichchatamakuto bhavam or a yoginam, which means whether one is a devotee or one who desires liberation or one who is a yogi, jnani or bhakta, whatever it may be, if he engages in Harivar Namana Kirtanam, depending on their desires, they will get the results accordingly. Whatever they desire, they will get. But one may say that in Chaitanya Charitamrita, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says, Ami Vigna Ehi Murka Vishaya Kena Diba Swa Charanamrita Diya Vishaya Bilaiba. I am intelligent, you are foolish, why should I fulfill your material desires? I will give you my Charanamrita and make you forget all your material desires. That generally refers to a Vaidhi Sadhaka who is tormented by material desires but want to achieve Krishna Prema. It does not talk about a mixed devotee. For a mixed devotee, the Supreme Lord fulfills their mixed devotional prayojan, whatever he is anchoring for. He may not identify it as an anartha. For a Jnana Yogi, liberation is not an anartha. But for a person on the path of pure devotion, he may still be a Vaidhi Sadhaka only, but still he will see, Krishna, I am so much conditioned to having a very comfortable life. When will I come to that stage where whether comfort is available or not, I very constantly perform my devotional service. That's how a Vaidhi Sadhaka prays. He says, please let me progress to a stage where whether I get material comforts or not, whether I am put in a distressful state or not, I steadily practice your devotional service. A person may not be there in that stage right now. Right now, when put in a difficult situation, he may think, oh my God, what will I do? I'm not able to remember you. I'm not able to chant properly. So you may think like that. But eventually, if he sincerely applies himself, Krishna will remove that desire. That's the difference. Okay? One last question and then we'll end here.
Vidhan, what was speciality of Dhruva Maharaj like?
Oh, Dhruva Maharaj is a Kripa Siddha. So it cannot be used as an example anywhere.
What was it?
Yeah, he practiced a sadhana for achieving material result, but the Lord came, touched him with his kaunkshala and immediately gave him prema, even though he was not qualified for it. So he was, Joga Swami mentions that he was a Kripa Siddha. So his sadhana cannot be, one cannot hope to perform that kind of sadhana with that kind of result and think that Krishna will purify that desire. Yeah, Narada's practice and Lord appearing is due to his practice of Vaidhi Sadhana. And Dhruva Maharaj's practicing and the Lord appearing, the Lord can appear. The Lord appeared to Daksha also. He was by no means a pure devotee at that time. But he appeared and gave him prema. That's like a big thing. That is because somehow, you cannot question Kripa Siddhi. If someone gets it, he gets it. So, of course, to receive the devotional seed is also Kripa only. But this is little higher Kripa. So, there is no reason for it. So, Harshad Prabhu.
Prabhuji, we had discussed that earlier. Shraddha is pure, right? And Sabha is contaminated. Yeah. Sometimes the Sabha may become so contaminated that it may affect our prayojan and we may find Krishna fulfilling that prayojan. So is it that our Shraddha is getting contaminated?
Quite possible. Because when the Sabha becomes very strong, the Shraddha becomes, it can make the Shraddha very vulnerable to predatory attacks. Generally, when you see, when people's have heavy impressions and their mind is creating lot of troubles, then they do chanting and all that. After some time, they are not getting any relief. So generally, they sometimes go to some astrologers and things like that. And those are, and already, Swabhava is very contaminated. Shraddha is very weakened, so a predatory attack can sort of contaminate the Shraddha. So it doesn't, a contaminated Swabhava does not directly contaminate the Shraddha, but the weakening that Shraddha, it makes it vulnerable for predatory attack in that sense. So then when he meets some other person who has a non-pure devotional ideology, and when he presents it in a very strong way as to, oh, this is the solution, pure devotion doesn't always work. So under some circumstances, you have to take this. So already he is doing and he is not seeing much effect. So at that time the Shraddha becomes vulnerable and he may succumb. And the Shraddha may get contaminated. So, in that way, it can affect the Shraddha.
Just an addition to it. And if our anarthas are getting fulfilled instead of getting removed, then what is the conclusion?
Then we have to ask.
Is the Shraddha contaminated there? Because, we discussed that. If prayojan is getting fulfilled, that means
Shraddha. Not necessarily. If it is getting fulfilled and still if you are identifying it as an anartha, then it means that what do you mean anartha getting fulfilled? Can you give an example?
Means if we have desires for bhakti mukti.
And you get that bhakti.
It could
just mean that the Lord is putting you in a situation to bring you closer to his lotus feet. If as long as you are identifying it as an anartha, you may be weak to fight it. That's another thing. But if you are identifying it as an anartha and you want it removed, Krishna will eventually remove it. Okay. So we'll end here, and tomorrow we'll continue from where we left. Today there is no need for any questions, no exam tomorrow. So every day you write exams, or later after 8 days you write? Every day, after every chapter you write.
Okay. So today we will not have, but tomorrow I'll complete this chapter, and from tomorrow onwards we'll try to complete one chapter a day. Or if the chapter is long, then we may complete little less. But tomorrow, today there was just introductory section.